And welcome in. I hope you had a great weekend. It's the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. It was a bad weekend for the Badgers, a great weekend for the Golden Eagles. Giannis is a year older, but not a penny richer yet. And, oh yeah, the Packers just keep on rolling.
You're going to have to pass it or do a jet sweep here. There's no way you're going to get in running.
Fourth and goal, and it is caught! Adams pulls it down. 1-on-1 coverage by Slay. And Adams fighting for everything these days. One of the absolute best in football. Stepping back. And going for the end zone. Wide open. Tonyan has another touchdown. Chance to go get some gold is what he tells them when they get down to these parts. Adams. 1-on-1 Slay's there. And he reaches across. It's a touchdown. He just charged right ahead. They gave the ball to Aaron because it's his 400th touchdown pass. You see that? Adams was aware of it, and he made sure that Aaron walked away with the football. Aaron gives it to one of the equipment managers for safekeeping. And the seventh player in NFL history to hit 400. Done it in the fewest number of games. Second and seven. Big running lane, and Jones takes off into the secondary. And now sprinting down the sideline. Wiggles past McCloud. And he's all the way to the end zone. Not to be denied.
Jim Nance and Tony Romo on the call on CBS. The final score, Packers 30, Eagles 16. Green Bay now 9-3 on the season. After a slow start to the game on Sunday, the Packers turned it on. But that didn't happen until the second quarter. Coach Matt LaFleur.
Everybody's well aware when you make a mistake. And football's an imperfect game. I made plenty of mistakes tonight. And thankfully, we have the players that go out there and are able to overcome my mistakes. So the last thing they need to hear is for me to get in their butt about something that they already know that they need to do better. And it's just, you got to stay the course.
Yeah, I think we're in a good position as a team. You know, the first goal is always the north. We are up three with four to play. So we had the opportunity, you know, magic number, as they say, is two for us. So we're in a good position in a division.
Quarterback Aaron Rodgers, who threw three touchdowns, his last one being number 400 for his career, to maybe the best target he's ever had, Devontae Adams.
I didn't do a whole lot on that play. It was a really good scheme play. He did the whole thing and stiff arm his way in the end zone. But it's fun to have those milestones back-to-back weeks. Like I said last week, a lot of it is longevity, but there also is some consistent play tied to it.
After the score, Adams presented Rodgers with the ball.
It was a cool moment. And again, to throw it to him, he did all the work. You know, I look at, I feel like my 100th touchdown was a really good throw to JJ on the seam route. The other ones weren't extremely difficult touchdown throws, but I am I'm proud of the number thrown to a lot of guys over the years who've been a part of that 400 number. We haven't had a 99-yard drive since 2009 against Cleveland, so it's fun to finish that thing off. Those are kind of backbreaking drives at times. It started with a great call by Matt and finished with a good touchdown. So that was an important time in the game for us. I am proud, obviously, of the 400th. I'm glad I got the ball. I'm going to hold on to that one. Now, let's see if I can get the 500 before I throw 100 picks, maybe.
On the flip side of the ball, one of the elements on defense Sunday was a more direct approach. After Coach Matt LaFleur heard the Smith brothers and Kenny Clark asked to have the defensive game plan simplified.
The more you can get everybody on the same page, the better off we're going to be. And I'm not saying I've always receptive to guys sharing their opinion. And I always tell them, we'll always listen. I can't guarantee we're always going to do exactly what you guys want to do. But I definitely think that there is an openness there and that we have to be willing to listen.
Still, though, the Packers defense wasn't perfect, struggling to contain Philadelphia's Jalen Hurts when he came into the ball game.
It never looks good when you give up a 4th-and-18 touchdown pass like that. That can't happen. Those are the things that, in order to be a great team, you can't give up plays like that. And I think our guys recognize that and we'll get that corrected. did. But I thought the effort, the energy, the focus, the execution was there for the majority of the game. And our guys really battled. You could feel the pass rush getting after the quarterback. There were 7 sacks.
But the play that put it away, one for Aaron Jones's highlight reel, a 77-yard, 5 broken tackle run to pay dirt with 2:36 left to play.
It's always great to see when you see a guy like David Bakhtiari or a guy like MVS out there in front straining for their brother on that play. Aaron Jones, a fantastic back. He did a lot of great things, but it's so great to see those guys battling for one another. And that was obviously a key play in the game, but also just that's what I love about our football team is guys playing for one another.
We ran a similar play the play before, and I felt like I was close to breaking it. Somebody just got a hand on me, and A-Rod called a similar play in the huddle. And if I seen a little crease, I'd be able to break it. And on that run, I have to give credit to my teammates. Without them, I wouldn't have been able to finish that run with Lazard, MVS, and Bobby finishing downfield. You kind of get a feel for what they've been doing all game, and we actually ran that into a pressure, so it worked out perfect and opened up the cutback. And Billy actually alerted me. I heard him down on the line making a call, and that alerted me that they were bringing pressure that way, and there's going to be one less person backside.
Taking a look at the final numbers for Aaron Jones, 15 carries for 130 yards, of course, 77 coming on that one long run to seal it. Aaron Rodgers, 25 of 34 for 295 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, a quarterback rating of 128.9. As per usual, his number one target was Davante Adams, catching 10 balls for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. Robert Tonyan, 4 receptions for 39 yards, but one of them was for a touchdown. Alan Lazard caught 3 balls. Aaron Jones out of the backfield caught 3 balls. Jamal Williams caught a couple of balls out of the backfield as well. Once again, your final score, the Packers beating the Eagles 30-16. Green Bay now 9-3 on the season. For what it's worth, Philadelphia falls to just 3-8-1 on the year. 4 games left for the Packers. They'll be at Detroit this coming Sunday. That is a 3:25 kickoff, followed by 2 home games against Carolina and Tennessee. And then the Packers will wind up the regular season Sunday, January 3rd at Chicago against the Bears. But of course, up first is Detroit. The Lions now 1-0 under interim head coach and Badgers Rose Bowl legend Daryl Bevel. This after the fourth quarter wheels fell off in the Windy City. We'll get to that. But before that, a former Badger alert.
Lions go straight to the line. Stafford stepping up now, rolling right and loading and throwing deep. Wants Cephas out there. Jump ball. Cephas makes the catch. Oh, baby, what a play by the rookie.
WJR Radio in Detroit with the call, a circus catch for Quintez Cephas. Now to the Bears meltdown. Detroit trailed by 10 points, 30-20, when they got the ball with 4:33 remaining. 2 minutes and 15 seconds later, the deficit was 3.
Stafford's got it. Stepping up, throws, got a man out there, caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! Marvin Jones on the receiving end, 25 yards on the connection, and the Lions are back in this game.
The Bears got it back on the ensuing kickoff, but didn't do anything with the ball while they had it. They gave it right back to Detroit, where the ageless one, Adrian Peterson, took it home.
Minute 42 to go. Clock will start on the snap. Matthews got it. Turns, gives to Peterson. Left side. Barreling his way down to the 1 yard line and in. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. He's into the house for the score, and the Lions are on top.
The final score from Soldier Field, 34-30. The Lions beat the Bears in come-from-behind fashion. Detroit and Chicago now both 5-7 on the season, but that's only part of the story. The bigger part of the story is that the Bears have now lost 6 in a row. Staying in the NFC North with another former Badger highlight.
For Carolina to put themselves one game below 500 and an opportunity to move deeper into the playoff chase if they can get the comeback in the second half, and it's not going to start that way. Joe Schobert, pick 6 for Jacksonville.
Beth Mowins on the call on CBS. Wasn't enough. The Jaguars are still terrible, but this one wasn't decided until overtime because Dan Bailey missed 2 extra points and a potential game winner in regulation for Minnesota. But he was able to get redemption.
Snap spot. Bailey! 6th win. The Vikings win 27-24. Bailey walks off a winner for the first time in his kicking career with the Minnesota Vikings.
Paul Allen on the call on KFAN Radio in Minneapolis. The Vikings take it 27-24. Minnesota now 6-6 on the season. Jacksonville falls to just 1-11 on the year. The Saints are the first team in the NFC to clinch a playoff berth. They beat the Falcons in Atlanta 21-16. New Orleans now 10-2 on the season. Atlanta is 4-8. It's important for the standings right now because the Saints are a game in front of the Packers, although because of the head-to-head, the Packers beating the Saints earlier this season, if Green Bay were to pick up a game at some point, again, because of the tiebreaker, the Packers would have the number one seed in the playoffs. But that's still four more games down the road. Moving on, the Colts play the Texans. Stop me if you've heard this one today, but here's a former Badger alert.
Rivers throws right side wide open, and that's Jonathan Taylor, 20, 15, 10, racing for the end zone. He's in! Touchdown, INDY! Jonathan Taylor, a 39-yard catch to Pater. It is 20-10 with 9:17 to go in quarter two.
ESPN 107.5, the Fan in Indianapolis with the call. The Colts beat the Texans 26-20. Indianapolis now 8-4 on the season. The Browns and Titans played in a battle for positioning in the AFC.
Mayfield's got him up. Third down and goal. From inside the one, he turns, he gives. Chubb vaults. He's in. Touchdown. And they score again. Wow, what a performance. Nick Chubb vaults over on the right side of the offensive line. And it's 37-7 Browns.
850 ESPN in Cleveland with the call. At halftime, Cleveland led 38-10. In the second half, though, the Browns were outscored by the Titans 28-3. Still, Cleveland held on. Barely. 41-35 the final score. The Browns now 9-3 on the season. The Titans are 8-4. To the NFC West, where the Rams continue their dominance over the Cardinals.
Second down and three. A running play. Henderson takes the handoff. He cuts middle. He's got space. Darrell Henderson hits him with the horsepower. Touchdown, LA!
J.B. Long on 710 ESPN in Los Angeles. For the seventh straight time, it was the Rams over the Cardinals. This time, the final score was 38-28. After a hot start, Arizona falls to 6-6 on the season. LA is 8-4. Don't look now, but the Giants are hot.
Second and goal at the six. Strong formation to the right. Play fake. McCoy throws it right for Morris, who walks in for the touchdown. A little play fake to Morris. They leaked him out in the right flat. It's another Toyota celebration. Morris's second touchdown of the quarter. And the Giants now lead it 14-5 with the extra point pending.
Play-by-play courtesy of WFAN Radio in New York. The Giants have won four straight games for the first time since 2016. But more importantly, they're now 5-7 on the season. The final score 17-12. New York winning at Seattle. In Kansas City, the Chiefs had all they could handle with the struggling Broncos. Don't tell Honey Badger, though. Honey Badger don't care.
Locked, feet staggered, left hash, takes the snap at his left knee. She's trying to get pressure. Pass is going to be intercepted this time. And the Honey Badger gets his second of the game. Tyrann Mathieu, his second pick, it'll end the game. And his fifth of the season. You can't trick the Honey Badger late in the game. And the Kansas City Chiefs get the huge, big turnover to close the game again.
Mitch Holthus on WDAF Radio in Kansas City. It was the Chiefs improving to 11-1 on the season. They turn away the Broncos, although it was a close one, 22-16, the final score. In Inglewood, the Chargers are up to no good. Literally, they suck. They got blasted by the Patriots 45-0. The LA Chargers going nowhere fast, now 3-9 on the season. And at the Meadowlands, Derek Carr threw a 46-yard touchdown pass to Henry Ruggs III with 5 seconds left. The Jets are awful, 0-12 on the season. The Raiders winning 31-28. And somehow, as of this podcast recording, Adam Gase still has a job. Still, three games have yet to be played. Coming up tonight, a doubleheader on Monday Night Football necessitated by the fact that the 49ers have no home right now because of the shutdown in Santa Clara County. So in Glendale, Arizona, at State Farm Stadium, the home of the Arizona Cardinals, the 49ers will officially be the home team playing host to the Buffalo Bills. Also, Washington is at Pittsburgh, the Steelers putting their 11-0 record on the line. Tuesday Night Football this week, it's the Cowboys and the Ravens from Baltimore. But next week, it's the Packers and the Lions. Joining me now, formerly of WSSP Radio in Milwaukee. He's been back, though, in his hometown of Detroit for the last decade plus. From the ticket, WXYT Radio in Detroit, Jeff Rieger joins me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Jeff, I appreciate the time very much. I want to start here with the coaching change. Matt Patricia just seemed as though that was never a good fit. It was like fitting a square peg into a round hole with the Detroit Lions. Got off on the wrong foot. And, you know, when you lose the locker room on day three, it's really hard to get it back. What was the response in Detroit when Matt Patricia was finally let go along with Bob Quinn?
Celebration, I think, is the one word that probably would be better than any other word. You know, it's so funny because you are so right. Matt Patricia came in here, took over a very good, I don't want to say very good, but a pretty good team, back-to-back 9-7 teams, which in Detroit, by the way, is like Super Bowl caliber. Like, you go 9-7, you should get a statue here with the Lions. And he takes over that program, and next thing you know, he tries to clean house, and he tries to get this culture change, and he alienates all the veterans, and he does everything that you could possibly do wrong. And then next thing that happens was opening night, Monday Night Football 2018 against the Jets, and they lose like 100-0. And at that point, I think people realize, what the heck is going on here? And it only got worse from there. So I think the majority of Lions fans were absolutely ecstatic that Patricia was going to be fired, because the Ford family moves ridiculously slow. They're the owners. And there was this belief, because of this edict that they gave Matt Patricia, that if he could find a way to play meaningful games in December, he was going to get to stick around. And then you get blown out on Thanksgiving. You get blown out the week before to an XFL quarterback in Carolina. And I think there were still Lions fans that wondered, are they going to make the move? Then Friday came. They didn't make the move. And people were starting to freak out a little bit. And then finally on Saturday, right around 3 o'clock, they decided to whack both men, Bob Quinn, who's been a disaster, and Matt Patricia, who's his buddy, who's been even worse. So I think everybody's pretty elated. And while nobody believes they're going to get the next hire right, I think at least you got a little hope, because they haven't screwed it up yet.
How difficult was Matt Patricia to cover as a reporter? It seemed as though he always walked into these meetings that NFL coaches are required to do with the Fourth Estate, and it just seemed as though he always had a chip on his shoulder for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, early on in year one, Doug, it was funny because, like, Matt Patricia, you see him. He kind of looks like an unmade bed, right? He really looks like he just got out of bed. But yet in year one, he had the audacity to question the posture of a reporter that apparently was, you know, leaning back in his seat, back when we actually used to get to go cover these guys. Now, you know, before the whole Zoom call thing.
Right.
But it started off like that. That made kind of news. And I don't know if he's a bad guy by any means. I think he hated talking to the media. He never gave the media anything. And he was just one of those dudes. There's two kinds of guys that covers, as you know. There's the sports cliche guy, where you ask a question and you get a lot of words but no actual answers. Then there's, like, other guys. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, Jim Leland here in Detroit, you know, years ago, the manager for the Tigers. He was great because he told you what was on his mind. He actually gave you an answer, sometimes to a fault, but he gave you an answer. Matt Patricia never gave you anything. Like, I got to tell you, like, it's actually almost – it's probably his most cherished memory in Detroit that he never cracked to the Detroit Lions media. The closest you got to him cracking was this year earlier – when he said he's responsible for the greatest fourth quarter play in the history of the NFL, because he wanted to take credit for, you know, Russell Wilson getting picked in the Super Bowl, Patriots Seahawks. And then he also said this year that when he took over the job, he had a lot of work to do. Now, that was a ridiculous quote, because it was back-to-back 9-7 teams. And then, of course, drew the ire of all the former Lions, including Dan Orlovsky, who went on ESPN and trashed him. Other than that, he said absolutely nothing. Like, to tell you how bad it's been, we used to play this game on the Lions postgame show. It was called Matty Patty Bingo. And we used to have the callers guess what Patricia was going to say, because he said the same thing every time. Got to credit the opposition. Got to coach better. Got to play better. And that was pretty much the extent of it. So, well, I don't think he was a bad guy. He was just, he never gave you anything.
He was Bill Belichick, or at least he was trying to be Bill Belichick, right?
That's the problem. Like, he probably sat there in the meetings in New England and thought, like, this is easy. I'm just going to take this to Detroit. But, like, and I truly wonder this. Maybe you can shed some light on this. You're a man that's been around, Doug. I consider you a mentor and a friend, okay? If you wait 13 years to get your job of your dreams, you're finally an NFL head coach, why wouldn't you adjust and adapt? No, instead you just decide to take the Patriots model. Literally, they took the Patriots model. They slapped them on the wall in Allen Park. And he did everything the Patriot way. There was no originality. There was no creativity. And now he's fired for it. Like, there's a reason these Patriot disciples don't work for the most part. It's because they don't have Belichick and they don't have Brady. And Matt Patricia obviously decided, hey, need a whole new culture change. He decided to go about it his way, and now he's out of a job. But he's still getting paid, so he's fine, I'm sure.
So he didn't have, to your point, Tom Brady. That's true. But he did have Matthew Stafford. And I thought that it was telling in the press conference after the game on Thanksgiving when Matthew Stafford was given the opportunity by a reporter to say, well, make the case for Matt Patricia. Why should he keep his job? And he basically said nothing. That is, as you know, that's against every code of the locker room that there ever is. You always back your coach. I thought, for me, that was the handwriting on the wall, and Sheila Ford Hamp didn't have any choice but to make the change right then and there.
And I think it's a great point, I do. But there's one caveat that I think we're missing here. Matt Stafford's never said anything. Like, you are right. Backing your coach doesn't mean much because you're going to back your coach. But if you don't back your coach, that's pretty much the kiss of death. However, Stafford has never said anything in 12 years of playing football. And that's kind of a beef with people. Like, people like that he's a good guy and he's a good community guy. And overall, like, he's the kind of guy you want to sit down and have a beer with. With that being said, he's been here 12 years. And as you know, part of the job of being the quarterback, like Aaron Rodgers has done, is you got to speak up, man, sometimes to your own detriment. And Matt Stafford hasn't said squat, with the exception of one time he said, I want to keep Jim Bob Cooter, who happened to be his OC at the time. They brought Jim Bob Cooter back, and the next year Jim Bob Cooter was fired. He just said literally one thing in 12 years now of playing quarterback. So maybe you want to say that's two things because, yes, he did not come to the backing of his head coach. But, you know, it's kind of like a Detroit Lion thing. We had one of the greatest running backs of all time in Barry Sanders. He left in his prime, and he, too, really big voice. Like, they would listen to anything he said. He never really said anything. Kelvin Johnson, kind of the same way, left in his prime, never really said much. Matt Stafford doesn't say anything. Now, if he says it behind closed doors, then maybe I'm totally wrong. But there's really never been a fiery, like, okay, this is unacceptable. Like, I view Matt Stafford as a good quarterback that is happy to be playing quarterback, but he doesn't have that winning gene, and I think this is kind of part of it. Like, at some point, if you're the leader, you make $27 million a year, you got to take over ownership as being the face of the franchise. Matt Stafford's never done that.
Now, there's been a thought in Detroit that right after Matt Patricia was fired, the Ford family should immediately call Jim Harbaugh. I don't know how well that went over with some of the folks in Detroit or in Ann Arbor, but what on earth has happened to Michigan football? Because I can't believe what I'm seeing.
I mean, Doug, can we talk about something positive? Like, the Tigers just hired A.J. Hinch. Sure, he was a cheater, but he's a good manager. No, listen, like, this is Detroit sports at its finest. Like, we have nothing, although Michigan State just beat Duke, so that's kind of cool. Now, listen, so it's year six for Harbaugh. He's 2-4. He's been a disaster. And it's gotten so bad, Doug, that, and I don't know if you guys have heard this scuttlebutt, Kirk Herbstreit from ESPN went on ESPN, and they were doing their CFP show. And he said that he believes Michigan's going to wave the white flag, allegedly using COVID as an excuse not to play the Buckeyes, which would then screw the Buckeyes because they won't get the sixth game necessary to play in the Big Ten title game. Now, the Big Ten's probably going to change the rules anyhow, so it doesn't really matter. But it's gone from a savior, literally, a Jesus wearing khakis, to now a guy that maybe is ducking the Buckeyes. And I'm not saying it's happening. I'm just saying that's the scuttlebutt right here now in Detroit. And obviously, it's bad because Jim Harbaugh doesn't have a signature win. He's 0-5 against the Buckeyes. Doesn't look like they'll play him this year, so he'll remain 0-5. He's 3-3 against Michigan State. But I have a telling stat, a super telling stat that I think should blow your mind. As an underdog, mind you, you're paying him $8 million a year. He's got this crazy insurance policy that gives him even more. He's got unlimited use of the jet, the private jet at Schembechler Hall. He is 0-15 as an underdog. Think about that. And that, in a nutshell, tells you what Jim Harbaugh is. The other thing, too, is, and you can see it, and I know it's always not fair to look at a guy and say, like, okay, what I'm witnessing is what he is. But he looks totally different. The fire, the passion, it's all gone. He had a quote on Monday, Doug, where somebody was asking him about, like, what's gone wrong. And his quote was, well, I know the outsiders, all they care about is results. But here on the inside, our process is really good. I'm paraphrasing. But what? We care about yes, we care about results because you're making $8 million and it's Michigan football. So the recruiting hasn't been good. They still have been unable to find a quarterback, which should blow your mind considering he was supposed to be the quarterback whisperer. And during the pandemic, it's definitely gotten worse. I don't know if he's going to bounce back, but I don't think he's going to go to the Lions. I think he's going to remain at Michigan because Ward Manuel will not fire him. There's no way that's going to happen. And the scuttlebutt is, and here's the conspiracy theory, so it's up to you if you want to believe it, but the scuttlebutt is they're going to extend him. They're going to extend him. He's going to take less money publicly, but privately they're probably going to boost that insurance policy, so it's probably the same money. They'll give him a three-year extension instead of like the Dabo Swinney 8 to 9 year extension or Nick Saban extension. And there's going to be a whole lot of incentives if you make the Big Ten title game or if you make the national championship game. And they got a really good, allegedly, recruiting class coming in. So that's going to be what it is. And going back to what Kirk Herbstreit talked about, waving the white flag, with how bad Michigan's been this year, again, it's up to you to believe this. If they were to get blown out by Ohio State next weekend, it's damn near impossible to give the man an extension when people are going to be like, okay, we don't want to kill you now. So the belief is they're going to give this man an extension because he hasn't lost these games. So again, it's up to you if you want to believe that or not, but that's one of the conspiracy theories being floating around. The bottom line is expect Jim Harbaugh to be back in Michigan. Like, there's no doubt in my mind they're going to extend him.
I love a good conspiracy theory. That's a really good one. I like that one a lot.
I'm not saying it's true or not. I'm just saying it's been floated out there.
Jeff, great stuff. I appreciate the time and the insight so much. Sounds like, at the very least, you're going to have a very interesting next couple of months.
Well, yeah, Doug. I mean, it's never great sports, but it's always, like, you know, kind of fun because somebody's already getting, you know, everybody's always miserable, I guess. So, you know, it's fun to whine a little bit. So, yes, that's Christmas time in Detroit, but always a pleasure talking to you, man.
You too. There he goes. Jeff Rieger from The Ticket in Detroit. A short but memorable stint before that at WSSP Radio back in the day. Jeff, absolutely one of the good guys in this business. Okay, a couple of final notes. The Badgers football team is young, banged up, and reeling right now after their loss to Indiana. It wasn't that they lost to the Hoosiers, because Indiana's having the season of their life this year, and good for them. But Wisconsin right now can't score. And if you can't score, you can't win. But they're so young at the skill positions in Madison. Graham Mertz, redshirt freshman. Shimray DK, true freshman. Jalen Berger, true freshman. And when Caden Lyles went out on Saturday early on, it was up to another freshman. He was a tackle in high school, but a guard most of the time in Madison. Tanner Bertolini did the best that he could. I'm not calling for his head. He was certainly put in a really difficult, if not impossible, situation, but he was on the struggle bus. He couldn't get the ball back to Mertz in the shotgun at all. He skipped a few snaps, sailed another. It was a rough afternoon for him. Again, I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying that it was difficult for him playing center to do what a center needs to do. 2020 has been a wash in so many ways, and I think that this Badger season is going to be another example of that. They're only going to play one more regular season game, although I still hope that they can reschedule the Minnesota game the week of the conference championship. They'll hopefully play a decent bowl game. But no matter what the bowl game is, they just need some game action. They just need some consistency on the practice field and then on the field to play. I don't care if they're in the Boca Raton Bowl. It doesn't matter. I don't care if it's the Bahamas Bowl. I don't care. I don't think they still do the Blue Bonnet Bowl, but or the Pool and Weed Eater Bowl. It doesn't matter. They just need to get some football reps. I do think that 2021 will be better in so many ways. Now, speaking of college football, congratulations to the University of Buffalo, led by Wisconsin native and former UW Whitewater coach Lance Leipold. They are ranked, the Buffalo Bulls, not the Bills, the Buffalo Bulls, They are a ranked team for the first time in school history. They're 4-0. Last year, they went to and won their first ever bowl game in Buffalo. And this season, they're 4-0. Granted, you know, we're not talking about a team that's 8-0 or anything like that because of COVID. They've only played four games, but they've won all four of those games. And for the first time, they cracked the top 25. This is what I know about Lance Leipold. He is a winner, and it's taken a few seasons to get everything turned around in Buffalo. And I don't know that they're going to win any national championships in Buffalo, but this is a good football team. And Lance Leipold is an outstanding football coach, and we're seeing that right now. We've seen it for the last couple of years in Buffalo, but we're certainly seeing it right now. So congratulations to Coach Leipold, his staff, and his players. They've earned it. They deserve it. Right now, the number 24 team in the country. All right, to college basketball. Wisconsin and Marquette, they met on the court at Fiserv Forum. And once again, for whatever reason, the Golden Eagles play their best when it's the team they hate the most, that team in red. And then UW bounces back and MU struggles. That's the way that it's been the last couple of years. Marquette wins the head-to-head between the two arch rivals. And then Marquette goes on and they play okay basketball but fall apart at the end. And then Wisconsin bounces back and they have an incredible season. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's going to continue this year. I think Marquette has some good recruits coming in, and the Badgers played pretty poorly at times, but good on Marquette. They earned that ball game. They were scrapping the whole way. But if you love basketball, that was a great game, especially the last 5 minutes, but the whole 40 minutes of just back and forth basketball. It never was a blowout in one way or the other. There weren't, you know, that many defensive lapses. It was, and then the last 5 minutes was just haymaker after haymaker. It was lead change after lead change. Marquette had a 1 point lead, then Wisconsin would get the ball and they would get a 1 point lead, and that went back and forth and back and forth. But just an incredible basketball game, and good on the Marquette Golden Eagles. They earned it, and hopefully that is something that can springboard them through the rest of the season. All right, much more on the Bucks later in the week, but as of this recording, Giannis has still not signed a Supermax extension, nor has he spoken to the media. Training camp, however, is in full swing with the season opener coming up in about 2 weeks, and that deadline of December 21st for Giannis to sign the Supermax, that is approaching as well. We're just 2 weeks away from that. All right, that's it for us today. Hope you had a great weekend. We're back with an Anything Goes Wednesday in a couple of days. Until then, you can get in touch with us at DougRussellPod.com. Again, DougRussellPod.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. Our username for both of those social media platforms is at DougRussellPod. You can search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook and YouTube as well. Enjoy your Monday as much as you can enjoy a Monday, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a good one.